Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey, everybody. We welcome you to the Sports Rivals. I'm Gary Thorne. We are delighted to have you with us. Our purpose here is to preserve memories of classic sports rivalries through the words of those who have participated in them. It gives you the description of what goes on in competition in the sports world from the inside out. You know, we talk about this, and we usually are thinking about players, number one, when we talk about the competition and the rivalries. We know it also exists as far as managers and coaches are concerned in all of the sports. It exists in front offices. We're all obviously trying to outdo one another. It's a part of the competition in every sport. There's another area, though, where there's also competition, and that's in the press box. For those who are covering games, sports journalists have always been an absolutely vital part of sports in bringing what's going on in the games to the people. For so much of our sports history, that was done through the daily newspapers. Obviously, that still goes on, but there's been enormous changes in just the last decade as to what sports journalists are doing to get stories out to people with all kinds of social media available. So we're going to talk about that rivalry that goes on in trying to get stories, get them first, and get them out in this day and age. And our two guests have been involved in doing this for a long time. Bob Nightingale has covered baseball all the way back to 1986. He had been with the Kansas City Star 9.5 years with the Los Angeles Times, has worked at the Sporting News, MSNBC, and he is at USA Today. Bob has been there as a columnist now for some 22 years. Just saying that scares the hell out of me, because it doesn't seem as though that's possible. Scott Miller has been a national baseball columnist at Bleacher Report since 2014. Scott came up with CBSSports.com, covered the Minnesota Twins for the Pioneer Press, was a general sports writer with an emphasis on baseball with the Los Angeles Times from 87 to 93. He's also a co-author of the book 90% Mental. We did that with the former pitcher and Chicago Cubs mental skills coach, Bob Tewksbury. So Bob Nightingale, Scott Miller are joining us here today to talk about the rivalry that goes on in sports journalism and the mighty changes that have taken place as of late. Guys, I'd like to, number one, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you doing this. And I'd just like to start conversation between the two of you by asking, what is sports journalism today? What does it look like? When I say that word to you, what comes to mind? Bob, let me start with you.
Well, everything's just completely different now, Gary. I mean, now sports journalism used to be, hey, breaking stories in the newspaper, writing, you know, beautifully written features. And now a lot of it's just, you know, guys, you know, breaking a story in 40 characters on Twitter and that sort of thing. So I think the writing has taken a back seat. I think The Athletic has helped resurrect that. Scott does great long pieces in Bleacher Report. But I think now it's just throwing stuff out there. People don't even have the, they'll look at stories on their cell phones and not even the laptops anymore, you know, let alone newspapers.
Yeah, Scott? Twitter comes to mind immediately, Gary. Yes. I hate to say it because Twitter, there's so much good about it, but yet so much bad. And I think in some ways, certain times of year, especially around the trade deadline or the winter meetings, you know, I think Twitter can bring out the worst in our business because it's like broadcasting play-by-play of rumors and in trade conversations or whatever. You know, say take a normal trade conversation, it may take several permeations over a week or two. And so when you're trying to cover every step of a trade conversation along the way on Twitter, oftentimes you know, you're too far out in front, or you can end up embarrassing yourself. And that's where I say it, the bite-sized pieces that Bob talked about, were, that's more where we're at today. And in many ways, regarding Twitter, it can represent the worst side of our business because, you know, I think I can probably speak for Bob in this. We grew up in a world where what you write in the newspaper or online in journalism, like it, you strive to be as accurate as you can. And when people can just throw stuff out on Twitter, oftentimes there's erroneous information. So that's kind of an ongoing source of frustration, I think, for many of us. But at the same time, you exist in the world the way it is today, and you have to, you know, you have to roll with things and try to, you know, keep up with everything.
And I mean, Twitter, some guy can screw up and just erase a tweet. In the back in the day with the newspapers, you know, before the internet, you know, you had that story for an entire day. You know, I remember Tiara Sullivan was working for the Fort Worth Star Telegram at the time. He had the story that A-Rod was a huge story, and the winter meetings was in Dallas, so it made it even bigger. So, but he says, you know, he had a good source, but he was still sweating bullets during half that day, saying, you know, God, I hope I'm right here, or else I look like a complete moron.
How about the rivalry then and now, guys, for getting a story? And, you know, you want to be exclusive. I mean, you're trying to be ahead of the pack on these things. Compare that, trying to do that 20 years ago, 15 years ago, to what it's like now.
Well, like, nowadays, like Bob said, go on, Bob.
You know, I say nowadays it's a, you know, people just kind of sidling up to guys like agents. I bet 99% of the stories in baseball now are broken through the agents. You know, whether they're getting their clients been traded, whether clients is signing a contract, that sort of thing. So you see a lot of guys more compromising their positions now just to get close to the agents and do favors. That part is not good at all for the business.
Yeah, and it all comes down, Gary, to so much of it comes down to relationships, and that's where it helps to have some years down, some years under our belts, in that over the, you know, there's no substitute for time in terms of developing relationships, be it with players, you know, starting with teams maybe we covered years ago, you know, the players, the coaches, the managers, executives. And then as you gain trust and relate and add to those relationships over the years, it kind of expands your Rolodex, so to speak, to use an old fashioned term. Now I guess it would expand your contact list in your iPhone. And so when you're chasing a story, the more people you have, be it general managers, assistant general managers, the more people you have access to that you can reach out and that will take your phone call and return your phone call or return your text, that trust you and will actually give you some information. That's the key. And, you know, as the field's expanded, it's gotten so crowded, like so many things in life, as with expanding websites and expanding, you know, national baseball writers. Mm-hmm. For example, when I started at CBSSports.com as their national guy in 2000, there were only about two or three of us. I mean, Peter Gammons had just gone from the Boston Globe to ESPN.com. And I think Fox Sports had a guy back then. It was way before Ken Rosenthal. He was still at the Baltimore Sun. I think Dave Van Dyke out of Chicago was the Fox guy. So there were maybe three or four of us, quote unquote, national guys. And Bob, you went to USA Today, you were with Baseball Weekly, and then USA Today. You were a national guy right around then as well, correct?
Yeah, right. And you're right about Dave Van Dyke. He was the first guy at Fox. But yeah, not many national guys, yeah.
So you had more room to roam on the landscape, and if you got a scoop, it was still a little bit like the newspaper days in that you might have something, you posted online or wherever your outlet was. you know, you would have it for a little while. There was no Twitter, and now fast forward to today, you know, there are almost more, you know, as many national writers as beat writers. And so you've got so many people elbowing for room and trying to talk to the same people, the executives and whomever, to get the stories. And I'll tell you one other thing that comes to mind. It'd be interesting, Bob, see if you agree with this or not. The paranoia in our business because of the competition to get scoops is off the charts. And just an example, like, it's so funny. Almost every one of us, you know, we'll be working at a ballpark, say wherever we're in, you know, at Camden Yards in Baltimore. And, you know, maybe I would need to talk to Buck Showalter about something when he was managing the Orioles. And then I may think I have a scoop, and then I look, and I'm aware throughout the entire batting practice, okay, who else is going up to talk to Buck Showalter? And you take mental notes, okay, the guy, you know, from the Baltimore Sun or the guy from USA Today. Oh, what's he talking to Buck about? That's kind of both the fun, humorous, and frustrating part of the business is, you know, the paranoia. You're always aware of who's talking to who.
Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, especially when the newspapers before the internet, you know, Tim Kirchin always tells a story, you know, and when Tim was in Dallas, you know, of course, the three papers, Dallas Morning News, the Homer Star Telegram and Times Herald. He says, you know, you get all three delivered to your driveway, you go outside. As Tim says, it was like looking at your report card. You're just kind of, you're kind of closing your eyes as your fingers going down the front page, like, okay, I could have got beat too badly. It's not on A1. Then you go to the sports section, like, yeah, okay, this, who had what? But those, you know, those days are gone because now it's on, you know, Twitter again, catch up in 5 seconds. You know, there was also the rivalry too, where I remember the Denver Post, the Rocky Mountain News was legendary. And it was, you know, bad in Dallas too. I mean, where people from the sports staff didn't speak to each other. It was almost forbidden. I was covering game with the Kansas City Royals with Jack Etkin. And Jack Etkin was just plugging his computer and looks up and he sees T.R. Sullivan. And he says, "Hey, T.R., how you doing? Good, Jack." And that was the end of the conversation. Jerry Fraley, who was as competitive as anybody I've been around, working for Dallas Morning News, walks over to Jack, points his finger in his chest, and says, "When did you get so friendly with the competition?" And that was it. I don't think they talked for years.
No, it's so funny. I can remember my first year on the Minnesota Twins beat, 1994. Going into Detroit, the old Tiger Stadium, that glorious old place. And it was one of the first trips. And, you know, I was just starting to meet some of the writers. And these guys, by the way, back in the day, they were almost heroes of yours. You wanted to get into the business, and you knew who was covering which team. For you would read the sporting news, and you knew some of these names long before you met them. Jerome Holtzman in Chicago, for example. But anyway, first time I go into Detroit and covering a Twins Tigers game, and Tom Gage, the longtime Detroit News beat writer for the Tigers, ended up winning the Spink Award at the Hall of Fame a few years ago. But after a game, we come back upstairs from the clubhouse, because back in those days too, you know, you would have friends, maybe you'd trade quotes. Like I wouldn't have time to go over to the Tigers clubhouse because I was working the Twins clubhouse. I'd go upstairs to the press box, and then, you know, maybe, you know, Tom Gage that particular day came up and said, "By the way, did you talk to whever it was, Tom Kelly? You know, I need did you happen to talk to Tom Kelly about whatever the situation was, you know, why he pitched to Alan Trammell in the seventh inning there, or whatever, what was he thinking?" And you kind of trade quotes. But I remember Tom Gage, to the competition point, you know, Tom came up to me, and one of the first things he said was, "Look," he said, "I don't care if you give a quote to the Detroit Free Press guy or this guy or that guy. I don't play that game. Don't worry about it. I just, if you can help me, great. And if I can help you, great. And I'm not watching to see who you're talking to." And I thought, well, there's a refreshing change.
No, that's the way it was. We used to those notes calls, notes conference calls, every Thursday and Friday. So people can either send in those columns, and it'll be like 8 or 10 of us in sharing notes. And that would go on for, you know, two and a half hours, just painstaking. And, you know, before you can put your, you know, notes on a computer and share them that way, or, you know, obviously they went away in time with the internet. People can just look up their own stories. But, you know, hey, you get off a plane, you know, particularly I remember places like in Cleveland, and you go to the out-of-town newsstand and grab as many papers as you can. It's almost like, okay, this is stuff I never heard of before. Hey, I'll use this for my column, because everything was just going in its own city. You know, I remember in the 88 World Series, guys were the Baltimore Sun, Kent Baker. And see Kent in the lobby morning, and he's going in his car to drive the suburbs. He goes, oh, I'm going to pick up some papers. So I'm going to have some notes for the paper tomorrow. I said, Kent, the LA Times is right here. Just grab this paper. He goes, no. He goes, the Baltimore Sun's owned by the LA Times. So I got to go get the suburban papers, because nobody's seen those notes yet.
Your eyes on the prowl for nuggets. They were so important back in the day. And Bob brought up a great point, too. I clearly remember those winter meetings in Dallas, the year when T.R. Sullivan of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram at the time broke the A-Rod to Texas free agent signing, $252 million, just eye-popping. And I mean, that obviously probably was one of the biggest scoops of our time. But again, how things have changed, as Bob pointed out, you know, I remember in the newspaper days, you know, you'd have something for that paper, for your paper. And, you know, if you had something that morning, you had 24 hours to just kind of let your breath out and exhale, because it was like, you knew, man, I beat my competition in on that, and there's nothing he can do about it until tomorrow morning's paper. So you almost had like the whole day to take a victory lap. And in a way, once you got past the nerves of, you'd wake up and check your competition's newspaper. And like it, when I covered the Twins, the Pioneer Press, part of the town I lived in, I had to go out to the paper box. They didn't do home delivery on that side of the Mississippi River, which sounds crazy. But I would know what I wrote, but I'd get the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and I'd check every morning. You'd have that. You'd hold that breath. You know, oh, my God, did he have a story on the Twins that I didn't? And then when he didn't, you know, Jim Suhan and Lavelle Neal in those days, you'd be like, oh, you know, that was your first breath of relief you could take, you know, as you grab your morning coffee. And if you had something they didn't have, you know, as I say, 24 hours, you were like great to go. You know, now on the internet, it's like somebody has a scoop and then it doesn't matter. It lasts about 10 seconds or a minute, and then somebody else matches it. And in a way, if you're the one getting beat, it makes it a little bit easier, because you don't have to wait that full day and just agonize and feel like an idiot for missing something until tomorrow morning's paper. So that part's good. But the flip side is, in this Twitter world, we're all on 24/7 now. And if you get beat by a scoop, the great thing is you can make a few calls or put some texts out, and you can come back with the story 10 minutes later. But the flip side is, you're all day long, you're checking Twitter and into the night, and you're double checking various sources, various places to make sure you're not getting, you know, falling too far behind. And so now it's a 24/7 never ending job.
Yeah. I mean, the camaraderie, I think, goes away too, because of Twitter and stuff. It's like, well, you can catch up in a matter of seconds. You know, people aren't sharing, information. I remember when I was coming to Kansas City Royals, and, you know, Bo Jackson, I think it was his second year or so, a couple of guys from the Dodgers, Terry Johnson and Gordy Burrell, come up to baseball and boardwalk where the Royals are training, and says, we got to talk to Bo. And I said, oh, man, I'm sorry. He only talks like, you know, once a week, but I know he's not talking today. Hey, I just did a big, long profile on him here. And so those guys, you know, read my candy laptop and spent 30 minutes took the quotes down, went back to Vero, and, you know, hit the bars and wrote their story. And that was the way it was. It wasn't like plagiarism. We saw guys helping out guys. And yeah, we don't see that nearly like we did.
Well, guys, let me ask you because
– go ahead, Scott. Go ahead.
I was just going to say because, like, back in those days, again, it was before the internet. So when with the camaraderie, like, you shared your Bo Jackson quotes with them, and they wrote it for their own papers, their own markets. But again, it's back to people in those markets wouldn't have seen your Bo Jackson story back in the day because it wasn't online. So it was almost, you know, like you could, wherever the cities were, they were filing to, be it Detroit or Los Angeles. It was still, you know, new. You kept your own material for the Kansas City area. And in those areas, you were helping them out because they weren't going to, their readers weren't going to see anything online anyway.
Guys, I was going to ask you in light of this, that there's always been a need for background information you get from people that is off the record as opposed to what's on the record. Has that, the distinction between those two, has it changed because of the social media and the Twitter and all of that as to what went on then, what you took as background and would have made a great story, but you weren't going to do it because it wasn't intended to be public, as opposed, is there more of that goes on today, Bob?
Yeah, I think the lines have really become way too blurry. You got to have a real trust factor of guys now to go off the record. I mean, back then, you know, when your notebook wasn't open, everything was off the record. You know, going team buses on team planes with the guys. Hey, when they're done playing, I'm done writing. See him at the same bars and restaurants. Everything you saw, everything you heard, you knew was off the record. And it was something that was kind of interesting. Hey, maybe some guy was complaining about the manager or maybe want to get traded. Yeah, you go to him the next day and say, hey, can I write that? And I think nowadays, I don't blame these guys for being very leery. And people don't know each other. I mean, the writers knew the players, you know, I go to their parties, they come over the house and go out, that sort of thing. And those days are gone. You know, I mean, we mentioned the Tigers. God, those Tigers were infamous for, you go down that clubhouse at 1 a.m, you know, half that team is still there drinking beer and stuff like that and talking baseball. You know, not to get drunk, but just to talk ball. And come up through, I learned from the Royals guys, you know, I owe so much to guys like Hal McRae and Frank White and George Brett. Saber again, you know, those guys, it just, everybody was talking baseball. You know, nowadays, you know, you walk in that clubhouse and, you know, half the guys are already gone.
Yeah, I think what I mentioned a little bit ago about relationships, that's how you build them and where we built them. And one area today regarding Gary, the off the record stuff, first off, there has to be a trust factor. But secondly, that trust factor isn't quite there today, I don't think, across the board at least, because, again, with the journalism industry, like many industries, being hit hard by cost cutting and newspapers shrinking, you know, there's so many times, so many cities, there are young writers covering the team. And, you know, we all were young writers at one time, but the turnover today because of layoffs or maybe a young writer covers a team for a year and he doesn't really want to do baseball. He was just plopped there because the other guy was laid off and now he's there for a year. And then he moves on to the basketball beat or to go cover news or whatever. With the turnover, there's so many young writers that are unfamiliar. And I think from a player's perspective now, a lot of people on our side come and go. And that doesn't lend itself to the trust factor at all when you don't, a guy's not there long enough to get to know each other. I know, you know, when Bob and I started, a lot of the beat writers and in many of the cities had been there for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And it was, the baseball beat used to be one in which once you were there, you stayed. And now it can be so transient. And it's maybe good in some ways that not everything remains off the record. Yeah, it reminds me, Gary, it goes back to the old Babe Ruth riding the train stories, right? The legendary story where you know, the writers, everybody traveled together, and a naked woman goes running down the boxcar, and Babe Ruth goes after her, chasing her. And the two writers that were on the train look at each other. They look up from their card game, and one of them says, "I didn't see anything there, did you?" And the other one says, "Nope." And they went back and played cards, and it was off the record.
Yeah, I did a story a few years ago, like, what happened to the clubhouse? How come guys aren't staying together? Now, you know, it could be a lot of it to the, you know, the ban of alcohol in the clubhouse now. When the young pitcher for the Cardinals, Josh Hancock, got killed. And it seemed like the beer disappeared after that. But I remember talking to Eric Chavez about that. And Chavez says, you know what? We don't even trust each other anymore. Not so much this immediate, even the player to player. He goes, you say something in the clubhouse, someone's putting it on Twitter or Instagram or tells, you know, members of her family, it's all over the place. So it's not just the media and the athletes. I think it's just even the athletes and the athletes themselves.
Yeah, and I remember toward the end of his career, somebody asked Derek Jeter, you know, hey, all the years you've been playing, what's the worst thing to come along in baseball, the worst technology? And he didn't bat an eye. He said the cell phone, a cell phone camera. And now it's because the reason being, you know, players out anywhere in a bar, you know, some fan comes up and wants a picture and asks, it's all in innocence. But if, say, it's, you know, a picture with a woman and it's innocent at the time, and yet then the person goes and puts the picture online and, you know, might spread, you know, hey, I was with Derek Jeter last night, I dated him, or whatever crazy stuff they may say. And that, I think that lends itself to the whole social media aspect of life today, where, like Bob said, players can be leery of each other, let alone the media. I mean, remember in the, just in the playoffs last year, remember the St. Louis Cardinals, they're in Atlanta Braves series. The Cardinals outfielder taped Mike Schilt giving his win one for the Gipper speech in the clubhouse before the game that was off color, which was shocking because Mike Schilt, and, you know, he never swears. And the guy put it out on Twitter and or somewhere. And that was even within the clubhouse. And the Cardinals had to deal with that, telling their own players, hey, you know, don't be putting this stuff out.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the Royals. Remember, you know, this way it was. With Dick Cagle, and we're coming in about 2 a.m. in Cleveland to the hotel. And when the pitchers is going out, he's got a drink in each hand, a woman in each arm, and hey, see you tomorrow. You know, have a good time. Don't think anything of it. Show up at the press box next day, you know, those hot, stinky days in Cleveland, and forgot that he happens to be the starting pitcher that day. So he said, oh, this is going to be interesting. So sure enough, you know, he lasts 3 innings, you know, gives up like 8 runs, 7 hits, just placid. And they, so after the game, you know, we go to one of them and say, hey, what happened today? Hey, you guys saw me last night. You know what happened. He would say, well, what can we write? I didn't have my good stuff. And that's the way it was. I don't think that could happen today.
As I've gone through this, I've been thinking, I mean, I know over the years talking with you guys, writers in general, there's a lot of pressure from upstairs, your editors. And it used to be where you guys talked about going to get the other newspapers from the competition. And if you didn't have the story, the editor was on the phone and in your ear, no uncertain terms, what happened, why didn't you have it? Where does that stand today? How much pressure do you get from upstairs with these stories that are immediately out and there's hardly time to even read them before the next one comes?
The editors respond quickly and say, hey, did you see this? You know, someone's tweet or something like that, and say, hey, we need something up fast. It's more a sense of urgency and, hey, how can you get a story? It's almost like, hey, get this up as fast as you can. And I think that's the way it is at most newspapers now. Now, I'm not sure how many guys are screaming at the writers about, hey, you should have had this, just because when people have something, you know, they have it for 20 seconds. You know, it's not like waking up in the morning and, you know, like Scott referenced before, and you get to have it for 24 hours. Now you get to have it for a matter of minutes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's just so much going on today. Again, in the social media world and on Twitter, there's so much information that's coming at people today, not just us us baseball writers, but even, as you asked, Gary, our editors or the people upstairs in the offices, they've got the same situation. I think they've got so much information coming at them, whether it's some breaking football news or basketball news or baseball news, you know, plus they're dealing with whatever the budget and their bosses. And it's almost today, like everybody's just in survival mode. And if some baseball story comes out, the editors, as Bob said, it's more, you might get that phone call from your office, hey, or a text even today. That's the other thing. You used to get the phone call from the office. I barely get those anymore. It's always texts or emails now. You talk to people less than you did. And, you know, you might get a quick text, you know, hey, this, did you see this? So-and-so just had this. You know, okay, yeah, I saw it. I've got a call out. I've got a text out. And then you get the text back from the editor. Okay, good. Just want to make sure you were on top of that. And so, yeah, it's not so much anymore where you get berated. Why didn't you have it? It's just, you know, here you go. Did you see this? Let's get something up on it. And I think it's because of what I said. There's just so much information flowing that, you know, even the editors upstairs, they don't have 5 or 10 minutes to give you a call and say, what the heck? Why didn't you have that? Because everybody's just bailing. Seems to me everybody's just bailing water as quick as they can in today's information age.
Hmm. Yeah, and some guys are good natured about it. I remember, you know, Gary, you were there when Adam Jones had the racial taunts at him at Fenway Park. And, you know, because of small clubhouse there, and they're bringing guys out, they're asking about different things. And Manny Machado, you had a funny interview. I was playing time, but I guess it was a lie with Machado when he's squaring every other word. And so I remember, Adam Jones is acting funny, and I like turn around the stands. So I grabbed Nick Lepardo from the Boston Globe, and we go to the clubhouse and grab Jones. I say, hey, Adam, something happened out there? And Adam, you know, kind of detailed what happened with the racial taunts and people throwing stuff at him. So going upstairs and, you know, write it quickly, you know, hits the internet. You know, and then when the, you know, Baltimore Sun guy says, oh, man, tomorrow's going to be a long, long day. You know, he saw what I wrote because it was tweet out. But he wasn't, you know, mad or throwing stuff. He just, hey, he had a deadline and he had to go. And, you know, I had a little bit more time on my hands.
Let me ask this, kind of rounding it out here. Where does the sports journalism and newspapers fit now and for tomorrow? Scott?
Well, I still think in a perfect world, we're the conduit to the fans. You know, we might get accused of asking negative questions here and there or whatever, but by and large, I think we should be asking the questions to get the information that the fans want to know. And that's changed formats. It's not the old fashioned newspapers so much anymore, is it? You know, now it is online and now we get the information out quickly. But by and large, I think the job should, for the most part, be what it's always been. And that is to educate and enlighten and entertain the fans that you know, work hard every day and can't wait for that night's ball game to watch their favorite team play. And that can't get enough information. They want to know, you know, what about our pitcher tonight? You know, what about, you know, our slugger and the guy, you know, our fifth place hitter that turned an ankle last week. What's up with that? I think by and large, that's still our job. It takes on different forms. And I always look at it like I try to give the reader glimpses of places he can't go, he or she can't go. You know, with our press passes, we have access to talk to the players, to the managers, to the front office. And I think we need to be as entertaining and informative as we can to the readers. And it's tougher and tougher as our access gets chipped away, as this trust we've talked about between players and writers or players and players or whoever it is, various forms, as the trust erodes a little bit, and as newspapers shrink and sadly in some cities close, I think there's always going to be a market for information, and because fans are so into sports and into their teams, and they want to know what's going on.
Yes, that's right. I think in many cases, far too many writers are writing for each other instead of writing for the fans and the readers. Yes. and that sort of thing. It's like, hey, let's be entertaining. Let's loosen things up. You know, what you feel bad about today, you can have, you know, most beautifully written story and say 2,000 words. If there's one negative quote in there, something negative, that's all people remember. They go to that. And that's what people talk about on the internet and Twitter. And it's like, you feel bad. I mean, you can have a manager saying, 99.9% nice things about the LA Dodgers. Says one negative thing out there, that's all people look at. So, you know, the attention span now is so low and so weak. And that's what, I'm surprised players even have Twitter, to tell you the truth. You know, just I can see if you want to get out your own your own message or, your own charities, that sort of thing. I remember a couple of years ago, David Price got up completely. And Price says, right now I could tweet out, God is good. And I swear people would tweet back, no, he's a jerk. What are you talking about? You know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I wish people would take time to read the whole thing and not just grab a one little negative thing and thinking that all stories are the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one area that's different today is from the past as well. All the various websites that aggregate stories and what Bob just said, there's so many sites now, they don't go out and cover the sport, but they've got a blogger or they've got somebody that just combs through the internet and pulls out what we write and what the original material we get. And that's the biggest problem, I think, what Bob just laid out is Bob or I could write the story he just said, talking to manager about the Los Angeles Dodgers, and 99% positive that, but there's that one negative quote where a guy blasts somebody. The aggregators that are not out at the ballparks, that don't have to face people, they'll comb through and they'll build their little blog about that one negative quote that'll what they're hanging their hat on. And then they tweet that out, and then everybody retweets and then it just takes off like wildfire. And yeah, I do think there's a lot of nuance is lost today. You know, if things are black and white or the long story with the negative quote, that's the one quote people hang their hat on. It gets frustrating at times because when you're out talking to people, as you guys know, there's so many layers to different stories, and there might be six reasons why a player is having the good year he's having, but by the time you get to the third reason, trying to lay it out in a well-balanced story, people have moved on because of the short attention spans.
Right. Remember back in the day, it's like if something was negative, someone goes, oh, you're writing that just to sell more papers. Now it's changed to, hey, clickbait.
Yeah.
I was going to let you go on that one, but in your talk, I have another question. I was just thinking about, the player, that site, I guess Derek Jeter started, where the players got to write whatever they wanted and it got posted and it's out there. Is there a danger we're even going to lose contact with the people that you're writing about, that they don't have to talk to the press anymore? They're just going to tweet and Instagram and go online and write their own story?
We could see that, particularly. And, I know the Baseball Writers Association was upset, looked silly at the time when we were banned from the clubhouses, before the pandemic here. And they, started writing letters to or send emails to MLB. Hey, what's going on here? So there is a danger that the access will be less. If there's less access, and the players will be sending out their own message. Why do I have to talk? And they really don't. So yeah, there's certainly that fear.
Yeah, there is. And in fact, I would say each team now, one thing that's relatively new in the last few years versus even 7 or 8 years ago, each team now has its own Instagram, its own social media account. And as such, they've hired some of their own people. Each club has a social media staff now. And between the players putting their own message out or the teams putting their own messages out, going straight to Instagram and things like that, there's definitely a concern that the players and even the teams don't have as much motivation to work with the traditional working press because of the various avenues they now are getting their own message out. And, you know, I mean, it's, as an old school journalist, it worries you because, many of these teams' Instagrams, you know, they're fun. You know, they'll follow a player from the dugout to the batting cage for batting practice and, you know, do whatever. But mostly what you're going to get is the cotton candy, the fluff, the sugar, the happy talk from the teams. And that doesn't mean I'm always looking for negative stuff, but there's a fine line toward being well balanced, you know, that hey, this is going on, but also this is going on. And to hear only from the players and only from the teams, you know, you're going to get the one side of the story but not the full story.
Guys, hate to end on a little negative there, but I'm afraid that's where we're ending, and that's exactly where we are. I can't thank you guys enough. Bob Nightingale, who's the columnist with USA Today, and Scott Miller, who was with the Bleacher Report. I really appreciate it. Just a very interesting discussion and an ongoing one, and one that clearly changes, I think, from day to day in this world. And after the pandemic, we'll see what it looks like in sports journalism. Guys, thanks a million. That's going to conclude another chapter of These Sports Rivals. You'd like to learn more about this and other episodes, we invite you to log on thesportsrivals.com. You can join the conversation, questions, and suggestions if you have some for future shows. You can follow us on Instagram at thesportsrivals, Twitter at rivals_podcast, and on Facebook by searching for These Sports Rivals Podcast. Thank you all. Our thanks to Bob and Scott for joining us here, and a look at the rivalry that still exists in the press box and trying to get that story. Thank you. And remember, it is the rivalries that make the games.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.